Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to talk about ways that we can live a longer life, turn off pain, and reverse disease. My guest in the second part of our program, Bruce Gagnon, is going to talk about Obama and Trump's militarization of space. We knew that Ronald Reagan was the first to launch that campaign. They've added hundreds of billions of dollars onto that. What does it mean? He is a coordinator of the Global Network Against Weapons and Nuclear Power in Space and a co-founder of the Global Network. And for over 30 years, he has focused on the militarization of space and organized Florida's largest peace demonstration in opposition to the first test flight of the Trident II nuclear missile at Cape Canaveral. And he's just completed a hunger strike, so we'll be talking with him about his work. Also today, we'll be looking at a continuation of our program to get millennials and the X generation, the baby boomers and the senior citizens to begin to work together, not across purposes, to allow those who've had both an interest in social issues but experience and be able to understand if we don't work together, then nothing is going to change. Having a demonstration, whether it's 200,000 people or 2 million people, doesn't mean anything in and of itself. It just shows that people are interested in something, but it's the hard work that takes years, sometimes decades, of focused, disciplined work on an issue before something actually changes. So we're going to talk about millennials from a millennial today. And also, we're losing a lot of our rights. Instead of having one of the constitutional attorneys on, like Danny Sheehan, I'm going to have George Carlin to talk about You Have No Rights. And also, I saw something yesterday that was sent to me from one of our listeners on Facebook. And it's short, but it really struck me. It's called What Will the Real One Bell? A Diary of the Reformed. And and I've had to heavily edit it, unfortunately, because of enormous amount of cursing in it. The cursing was appropriate to the what he was stating in the environment and with the people he was stating it to. But this is a worldwide audience. People of every denomination, every ethnic background, every sensibility. So in many cases, I have to show prudence by respecting the sensibilities of people. You'll get the message. Clearly you'll get the message. You just won't get all the profanity that went with it and some racial comments as well. This is someone from the hood speaking to people from the same environment about what lessons he's learned. Also, I believe that any responsible person would want to see that we have election reform, take all money out of elections. That's important. We don't have that discussion. There are no marches. There's no Me Too movement on that. I believe that we should be very conscientious that more children go to sleep in America nutritionally deprived, meaning they're hungry. Their parents don't have enough food for them. We're talking about almost 17 to 18 million children. That's a huge number. That's as large as any two cities in America put together, not including the suburbs. But if you took, we can't beat the deep state, we can't beat the New York Times or CNN, we can't change them. And they have the power, the money to influence people. But they can't influence the people that are already listening. They can influence the people who are not. They can't take away Chris Hedges' legitimacy to the audience that knows he or Glenn Ford, but they can prevent other people from knowing about Glenn Ford or Chris Hedges or about 1,100 other very vital thinkers. And they've been doing this, and it's accelerating, and they've exposed themselves to our scrutiny. And because of the enormous amount of contacts that I have we are able now to tell you who these people are. And we're going to be having demonstrations in front of their homes, their synagogues, where they go. We're going to be all over them because that they can't stop. And let's see how they like it when we expose them on a weekly basis, and we will. And we've been doing all this very quietly. That happens as of next week. And then you'll see why they've done everything humanly possible to try to marginalize, attack, or destroy. But it won't work, as you will see very shortly. In any case, what we're doing now is we're focusing all of our energy on, let's say, gun control, or the Russians hacking the DNC, which there's no proof that the Russians hacked the DNC at all, none. But there is a lot of proof that the people in the deep state, the Justice Department, the FBI, and the National Security Agency, and the CIA, and the White House conspired to fix an election. They were so sure that their candidate was going to get into office, but that person didn't. Instead of simply accepting that, they made the mistake of exposing themselves by undermining, and now they're in an impossible position. They're all going to be exposed. But in the process, shouldn't we start to broaden our concern for issues beyond just gun control? And reasonable people can say, yes, we need gun control. We need to ban assault weapons. We need greater background checks. But think of all the people who do not commit any crime whatsoever. 99.9% of the people. So you need reasonable and responsible voices to come together. We don't have that at this moment. So I'm going to add something else to those people in school. How many of your friends have been put into the sexual trademark in the United States? None? Not true. You will be amazed at what we're going to share with you today in a reality check with Ben Swan about how prevalent the American sexual trade is. It is huge. That should be on everyone's agenda of something to be paying attention to. Because what do you think happens to a young 10, 12, 14, 16-year-old girl who is kidnapped or lured into the sex trade, and then all the abuses that occur? What do you think that does to their minds, their lives, their bodies? That's a big deal. So we'll talk about that. We always start with the latest on health and healing. And today is no exception. Researchers have linked dietary supplement DHA, that's what you get from your omega-3 fatty acids, to higher fat-free body mass in children from the University of Kansas. And that's important because we have an epidemic of being overweight or obese children in the United States. In fact, it begins as early as 3 years of age, and by the age of five, we're seeing a lot of very fat babies, and that means we're putting them into harm's way. And this was using 600 milligrams a day and against a placebo, and then they looked over a five-year period and found when this was taken each day, you had a lot of mothers that took the supplements and their children had a lot less fat. That's important. Also, I was looking at the latest scientific studies on antiviral components in foods. Now, we know that there's antiviral components in garlic and onions and shallots. And the red onion has one of the most massive amounts of antiviral properties. But also there's the soybean. In fact, the University of Illinois College of Agricultural Sciences in Urbana found that soybean meal, that is the what happens when they dry the soybean and pulverize it, that's where you get your protein also, that it has a substantial amount of antiviral activity. And that can promote growth and in a good way and kill viruses, and that's important. From Natural Health 365 comes an article I read about Gardasil. Now, I am absolutely 100% opposed to anyone receiving Gardasil under any circumstance because my research has shown that it's bad science. But Gardasil is mandatory in California and many other places, and millions of boys and girls are getting Gardasil. It's merely to make money. And Gardasil is the most well-known vaccine out there for the human papillomavirus. That's according to the U.S. CDC. 6 out of 10 parents in the United States currently opt to give their preteen children, both girls and boys, the vaccine. And of course, well-meaning parents are simply trying to do the right thing by listening to the advice of the CDC or their doctors, who say that the vaccine will help their child prevent human papillomavirus and certain kinds of cancers. None of that is true, by the way. Recent research has found that Gardasil prevents neither and may even increase the risk of the disease. So I think we need a reality check. The statistics regarding the human papillomavirus in young people can be scary. According to the CDC, human papillomavirus is the most common sexually transmitted disease in the United States, affecting roughly nearly 80 million teens and 20-somethings. A recent report found 42% of Americans are infected with human papillomavirus, and Merck is the manufacturer of the main vaccine for the human papillomavirus, which goes by the name of Gardasil. Now, vaccine manufacturers and the U.S. Center for Disease Control tout the vaccine as the main way to prevent the virus as well as reduce the risk of cervical cancer. In addition, the CDC has been recommending that boys 11 to 12 get the Gardasil vaccine, and which makes no sense because most boys 11 years old are not sexually active. And also, it doesn't have any long-term benefits. And just so you understand, the human papillomavirus is not a single virus. It's a group of more than 150 related viruses that are transmitted through intimate skin-to-skin contact. And the human papillomavirus vaccines protect against only four out of 150. What's more, some evidence suggests that getting the vaccine may make the person more susceptible to other strains. So it's time to expose the questionable so-called studies that talk about vaccine effectiveness. An investigation conducted by the CDC's National Center for HIV, Viral Hepatitis, STDs, and TB prevention is often used to support the claim that human papilloma vaccine is effective. The conclusion of the CDC was that, quote, within 4 years of vaccine introduction, the vaccine-type human papillomavirus prevalence decreased among females aged 14 to 19 years despite low vaccine uptake, and that, in turn, the estimated vaccine effectiveness was high. Quote, despite low vaccine uptake, this is the operative phrase here, since other reports have indicated that those who do not take the vaccine but do keep up with regular pap smears and a healthy lifestyle are actually more likely to see the human papillomavirus disappear or never get it in the first place. In fact, according to the CDC's own statistics, quote, most human papillomavirus infections, that's 90%, go away by partners and those who have another sexually transmitted disease such as herpes go away within 2 years, end quote. So, that is what's important. So just so you know, 90% of the human papillomaviruses self-destruct within 2 years with nothing being done. So that's what you're not being told. You're being lied to. And by the way, according to the peer-reviewed journal, Clinical Rheumatology adds more clearly that the Gardasil has generated 42,000 adverse reaction reports on the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. And when I interviewed the former commissioner of the FDA, he said that only about one out of 100 of these adverse effects are ever actually reported. So imagine if you got 42,000 times 100, Now you're dealing in millions of people who've been affected. And this is mainly in young girls. Severe and persistent headaches, arthritis, gastroenteritis, systemic lupus, and central nervous system conditions. And other studies have connected the human papilloma vaccines to what's called POTS, P-O-T-S, that's postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and also ASIA, A-S-A-I-A, which is autoimmune auto-inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants like mercury or aluminum, as well as extreme and long-lasting chronic fatigue. The people I've interviewed have stated that the young daughters are suffering from fatigue so severe that they're barely able to get out of bed at all during a day. And we're talking about tens of thousands of individuals. Their immune systems simply collapse. So just remember, pass this on, that there's an awful lot of contradictory and negative information about the vaccine. From GreenMedInfo, an article I read about how probiotics detoxify your body. Most people never think that probiotics as a detoxifying agent, especially against bad chemicals. Well, you've probably heard the buzz already about the many health benefits of probiotics. I don't have to repeat. I've done it on this show. A word which literally translates pro, which means for, biotics, which means life. So probiotics really mean for life. But did you know that these remarkable microorganisms, which outnumber our body's cells by some estimates up to 10 to 1, and contribute over 99% of your body's total genetic information, also break down highly toxic man-made chemicals which your body is neither incapable of using or only partially capable of taking out of your body. And the probiotics are able to do this, especially with pesticides. For example, one of the things that they found with kimchi, K-I-M-C-H-I, which is a fermented, it's Korean traditional fermented cabbage dish, it's able to take pesticides out of the body, all types of pesticides. And then lactobacillus bacteria, found in foods, have been looked at as an agent to help reduce heavy metal toxicity like lead and cadmium and mercury from the body. And even cancerous food preserves are able to be taken out, like sodium nitrite, by up to 90% after 5 days. By the way, sodium nitrite, which is in all your hot dogs and most of your hamburgers, becomes toxic when it is converted in food products and even our intestines. So you don't want that in your body. So one more reason why you should be having your probiotics every single day. And also for those of you who have had breast implants or are considering it, you should be concerned because there is now a spike in breast implant-associated anaplastic large cell lymphoma in women who've gotten implants, and that is dangerous. So be very conscientious about when you get a breast implant. Those implants can cause DNA damage, and that can put you at risk of breast cancer. And from the Daily Herald, there's an article about how good nutrition can help protect, heal, and avoid ill health. All forms. And I'm just glad to see this because they were referring to some doctors in here, medical doctors, who are finally beginning to appreciate the role of nutrition in helping keep the body in its acid-alkaline balance, because the common American diet, heavy in sugars and refined carbohydrates, meats, keeps you very acidic. And acidic is not where you want to be. You're more susceptible to pain and infection. You want to be slightly alkaline. And that's what the American diet, done right, will do. And finally, evidence from Cornell University, yes, we are what we eat. We've heard that a long time. So be conscious of what you eat. Eat that which your body is able to utilize and see how you feel. There was an article in Molecular Biology and Evolution on this very topic. And we've been hearing that for a long time. And they also took a look in a remote Italian village and found that they have very healthy older people there. And right now in the United States, the end of our lifespan is around 78 years. Of course, some people will live older and some people live shorter, all based upon the choices they make. And we know that better diets, exercise will allow you to live longer. But we have very few people, 0.02% will hit 100 years of age. However, in one simple little community, the University of California at San Diego School of Medicine and the University of Rome looked at 300 citizens all over 100 years of age, all living in a remote Italian village nestled between the ocean and the mountains on the country's coast. Quote, we were the first group of researchers to be given permission to study the population in this community. And they found that the people took long walks, they biked up in the mountains, they had a lot of, they ate almost exclusively the Mediterranean diet, they used the herb rosemary a great deal, they had very low rates of heart disease or Alzheimer's, osteoporosis, they were very strong, family was very important. They all sensed that they had a mission in life. They were not afraid of life nor death. And the people ate a lot of fresh foods, a lot of raw foods, and almost everything came from locally, meaning they grew it. Very little was in cans or boxes. So it's something to appreciate. Now, I've been in the mountains of Italy, and I'm not sure if I was in that village or not, because I was all over the country and every day. I'd be out running. It's kind of fun if you saw this. There's my buddies, my brothers, in a Jeep, including a medical doctor who's a friend who's Italian, and an Italian close friend of mine, because they could speak the language. I didn't. And I'd run 25, 30 miles in a day from hamlet to hamlet. And you would see these small communities, 6 to 10 homes. Some of those homes were 500, 600, 700, 800 years old. And it had that old earthy smell to it. And all the people, we were total strangers, they were extremely hospitable. The Italians, extremely loving and warm-hearted. They live a very evenly paced life. You know, they have their routines every day. They start before sunrise, and they take their long siesta. They take a break. They live very paced. They're not hyper. I mean, if you spend a day there, the day seems forever because everything moves kind of slow. But boy, the food is phenomenal. The smiles on their face, the joy of being around people that they are multi-generational. And we don't have that in America, with few exceptions. We're 25 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come out of the break, and we're going to go right into George Carlin talking about you have no rights because you only have the rights right now the state gives you. And you think, well, that's not true. I can go buy whatever I want. I can eat whatever I want. I can vote wherever I want to. And then I'll ask you, okay, how many different people do you have to vote for, and how much attention and base of insight and information is each one of those candidates given? You have a two-party system which is controlled by the oligarchs, so where's your freedom? And you can buy the stuff that they produce for you. What about the stuff they produce for you that's not healthy? You have all those dresses and clothes you can buy, but they're made on slave labor. And look at how many of the foods that you can buy and consume all you want that cause death and disease. Where are they protecting your interests? Where are they giving you variety? You can find some variety, but you have to go look for it. The state is not providing you with the things that are most healthy in life. And they're watching everything you do. To the man who wanted to grow vegetables in his front yard, They said, you do, and you're getting a big fine. To the person that wanted to say no to mandatory vaccines, that person's children could be taken away and they could be put in jail for being an unfit or abusive parent. To the person that wanted to protest anything, you're now on a surveillance list. And Google and Facebook are providing the information on everything about you, everywhere you've been, everything you've deleted. Just remember, every single delete, they have a copy of. So you think you have freedoms, only those that the state gives you. Back in a moment with George Carlin.
In this country's always running around yammering about rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument, it came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking. He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you can get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights in this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things like slavery. Just slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last after all this time that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious rights, okay? In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way. Into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see, oh, sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Personally, I lean toward unlimited rights. I feel, for instance, I have the right to do anything I please. But if I do something you don't like, I think you have the right to kill me. So where are you going to find a fairer deal than that? So the next time some soul says, gee, I have a right to my opinion, you say, oh, yeah, well, I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion. Then shoot and walk away.
George Carlin. Keeping it in perspective. Now I want to play a clip from this young man talking about what it's like when he is living in a ghetto, he is surrounded by violence, and his mind begins to perceive violence as normal. And here's what he has to say.
It's 3 o'clock in the morning and I get a phone call from my little cousin talking about he just got shot at. And the first thing goes in my mind is why every time I get a chance to stick his head up out of life muddy waters is his street loyalty requested. I mean, it's not like for me gunplay was ever subconsciously manifested, or maybe it was. Maybe that's why at 3 o'clock in the morning he decided to call Big Cuz. Because 3 years ago my motto was shoot first, ask questions later. And almost like I was an autopilot, I got dressed, put on a bulletproof vest, and I flexed. Put some Scarface in my CD changer to channel my anger. And when I was driving up Biscayne Boulevard, my heart became cold and hard because everybody knows that a soft heart don't squeeze triggers. Hit the CD changer and went straight to Icons, the mothers, and by the time I got to 54th Street, it was on. Even though it seems just 3 hours ago I was trying to change the world through one of my poems, I looked around and got put into a do-or-die situation. My destination, 3 blocks past the Metro Rail Station, Blue House, on the corner. See, it's been 3 years now, some things done changed in my life. Not like the old days when it was cool to grab a tool to poke some holes in a few fools. See, tonight, I'm feeling like I got something to lose. And maybe it all went down at Piper High School when a young lady walked up and told me that she was her brother, turns out, just like me. Or maybe it was at North Miami Senior High Miss Blues class when they studied my poetry for Black History. Or maybe it was in that letter from an inmate from Rayford Penitentiary stating that now through my poetry he could be free. But nevertheless, I'm sitting in this truck with a fully loaded Glock to represent the man in me. And some way, somehow, this has to stop. Because in about 3 or 4 minutes, we're finna yellow tape off this whole block. And I'm asking myself questions like, how did I go from being righteous to crazy? Do I really want to take part in another mother screaming, oh God, please stop my baby? So I step out of the truck and position myself between my cousin and the victim. And I say, in order for it to go down, you got to shoot through me to hit him. And I understand that you feel like you've been done wrong. But brother, tell me, how many, how long will we continue to throw deaths in our mind and have our lives be defined by how we put in the chalk line? See, way before it was just black on black crime, it was black on black line. So let me break down for y'all in this black on black rhyme. See, we made ourselves believe that we didn't need each other. But how many times you done been in an all-white situation and was so glad just to see another brother? So we need to take that feeling from the boardroom to the streets. And the me not wanting to kill you tonight does not make me weak. What makes me weak is not having the ability to let you know that in spite of yourself and regardless of your actions, I still love you. You look just like me. And brother, we really ain't got to do this.
Powerful. Powerful. Well said. You got to listen to it a couple times to get it all. Now I want you to hear about millennials. This is our continuation of trying to get millennials to understand what it is that they could ultimately be, how they could broaden their perspective on life, how they could cooperate instead of feeling disdain or mocking those who are older. And this is a millennial talking to millennials, and he's not berating them. He's trying to get them angry so they can think. Please listen.
Can you say the word pathetic with me? Why? Well, there's a high level of obesity. This is embarrassing. Obesity. Unfit physically, unable to perform the most basic military maneuvers. Uneducated. Oh, wait a minute. Are you going to say we're uneducated? You can go to school and be uneducated. Isn't that an incredible realization? that you can go through school and they can pass you because they don't want you just lingering in the grade. And they'll keep moving you through the system and they'll stick out practically illiterate students all the time. They can find oatmeal in the grocery store because they recognize the oatmeal box, not because they can read oatmeal. Unlearned mentally, unable to pass the most basic academic tests of competence. We can't hear. You have to be able to hear, I guess, to get into the military at some level. Lost acute hearing ability due to the volume of music. It's embarrassing. We are unfit to protect our lives, to protect our marriages, to protect our families, to protect our towns, protect our states, to protect our nations. We are unready for battle. So The Dumbest Generation Ever, this is the book that I was referring to. It's actually called The Dumbest Generation, or this is the other option title for it, or Don't Trust Anyone Over 30. That's an attitude of an entire generation. You can't trust these guys. Those over 30, we have definitely seen some weaknesses in the older generation. There's no doubt about it. But I want you to know, those over 30 possibly know more than you do, as those of you that are under 30. You may know more about computer programming. However, they oftentimes know more about life. And we have disconnected ourselves from any knowledge fuel source that would give us an understanding of how life actually works. So look at this. It goes through, I think it's like six things I'll mention here, but six observations of why we are the dumbest generation ever. How do you guys like being classified as that? Isn't that a fun title to wear? See, I'm trying to get you mad, is what I'm trying to do. Don't accept that title. Don't sit around and allow that to be your title. Hit it back. Knowledge deficits. The least supply of common life, social, and cultural knowledge of any generation. This is my little statement that I add to it. Disconnect them from their devices and they die. See, as long as they have their computer, their laptop, their PDA, whatever it is, they can make it through life. They can figure out directions. They can do their research. How do they do their research? Google. That's their research. And so as a result, you disconnect them from their devices, stick them in a forest all by themselves and, run away with the car. They die. They have no way of surviving. They do not know how to live outside of the system. They're bibliophobes, which isn't just a fear of the Bible. This is a fear of books. The highest disregard of books and reading of any generation. Now, look, there's my comment. Give them a book and they turn it into kindling. Number three, screen time. It's the greatest amount of time in front of a screen of any generation. You could say, well, previous generations didn't even have screens. I don't know what it was. The 40s or 50s when television started coming out. And they were watching television all the time because it was such a novelty. Doesn't even compare to what we are doing in this generation. We are almost always in front of a screen, whether it's a computer screen or a television screen or a movie screen. Almost always. Or a cell phone screen. Whatever it is, we are addicted to the screen. And obviously, this is having some kind of effect upon us. Don't expect them to be involved in the rescue of this world, for they are completely lost in another one. Online learning skills, the least effective research skills which garner true information of any generation. Our generation does not know how to find true information. We know how to find information. We have the information superhighway. Oh yeah, we know how to find information. Is it true? Are you able to test and see if it's true? Do you have any filter of knowing if it's true? Well, it's the highest Google ranking. Let me tell you, the highest Google ranking is nearly inevitably wrong. Okay, it does not necessarily mean it is right. It just means more people are turning to it than something else. There are all sorts of top Google rankings in this world, but that does not mean that they are true. The motto for information gathering, the highest Google ranking rules. Wikipedia is the new Bible, and good bloggers are the oracles of the now. If you can write, this generation will submit to you, lay down their lives before you and say, train my mind how to think. Does not mean that you know how to live. It does not mean you have a scrap of actual real-world intelligence. You have not earned a medal through your life lived, and yet you can write and you can impress people with your phraseology, and as a result, this generation will submit to you and they will follow your lead. You could be 17 years old and not know a thing, but you can write. You can control the minds of a generation. Betrayal of mentors is another hallmark of this generation, of these 18 to 24 year olds. They're the most apt to disbelieve, disregard, or betray teachers and mentors of any generation. Their commitments mean nothing, for they are loyal only to that which feels good to them in the moment.
More to think about. On my next program, I will offer a commentary on looking at models of behavior throughout all of human history for men and women that we should be at least trying to emulate the person in their character. Their unique skills and talents are theirs and for us to benefit. Now we have to evolve our own. And our own skills and unique talent does not include groupthink, easily and pliable conditioned minds. So you're going to get a history lesson on our next program. We're going to go to our guest in a moment. But first, it was a year ago that I stopped one of our products because I only want to carry those that people find really important to them. And this product for about 20 years was very important. And then it slowed down to where it was just a trickle. And I'm a small little company, and I'm not out there in any big way, but I have the most important product, so it's got one of those little ironies. It's like the little tiny restaurant hidden away on the back street of a city that happens to have the best food and the best service and is most nutritious. If you don't know about it, you won't benefit from it. And so I started getting calls from people saying, you're going to have it back. And then about 2 months ago, I was flying, as I frequently do for the documentaries I'm producing, and while waiting for about 2 hours on a flight, this woman came over to me. I'm guessing she was in her 70s, and we had a little conversation, and she said, I'm sorry to bother you, but I just want to let you know that I wish you'd bring back your fiber stuff because it really makes a difference for me. And I've tried other things that don't even begin to compare. And so we talked, and I saw on her that it really benefited. She was honest and open about it. And so I've decided to bring back fiber stuff. So I put it back into production about 2 months ago. And today we just received a shipment. So now we have it back. It's vegan. I put together a blend of flaxseed and psyllium husks and rice bran and apple fiber and oat bran, carrots, and oranges, and pineapple, and lemon, and lime, and cherries, and watermelon, and pears, and mangoes, and strawberries, and papaya, and cranberry, and guar, and ginger, and fennel seed, and anise seed, and cinnamon, and stevia. And that's what makes it so unique. There's never been a fiber product like this. And I actually brought the price down. It's now $27.99. And yet it's perfect product. 13 grams of high-quality fiber, and I just gave you all the different fibers. Actually, 3 grams of protein in it as well. So fiber stuff as of today is back after a year of being out. And you can thank that woman. Her name is Elise, and she came over to me in an airport, and it moved me. It touched me. I felt, you know, in her own very calm way, that something she had in her life that made a difference, and then when it was no longer available, she tried other things and didn't. The other things just don't work. Now she'll have her fiber stuff back. You can too. Fiber stuff. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And watch what happens when. Best time to take fiber stuffs around right after dinner. And watch your system the next morning. And that can help a lot of people. Call 877-627-5065 for fiber stuff. It's back. We're going to take a break. Come back with our guests. Please stay with us.
Finally found the right girl, someone that I can spend my life with, spend my nights with, share my life with.
Okay, we're going up to Maine now. We're standing by is Bruce Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N. I gave you his bio earlier in the program. Nice to have you with us, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce, Obama and now Trump have refused to sign the Prevention of an Arms Race in Outer Space Treaty, which would ban conventional weapons deployments into space. And yet, unbeknownst to the average person, because it is never reported in the media, we are already experimenting with weapons in space. For example, the U.S. shooting down one of its disabled military satellites, and China has done the same. And now, earlier this month, Trump announced during a speech that he wants to create a new branch of the military, a space force. Although the GOP representative, Mike Rogers, proposed a militarized space corps last spring, Trump seems to be pushing it forward. In his typical kindergarten grammar, he said, quote, "Space is a war-fighting domain just like the land, air, and sea. We may even have a space force develop another one, Space Force. We have the Air Force. We'll have the Space Force. We have the Army, the Navy. I was saying it the other day, because we're doing a tremendous amount of work in space. I said, maybe we need a new force. We all call it Space Force. I call it a lack of grammatical proper enunciation, but that's just me. My question is, how seriously should we take Trump? Because weaponization of space has been on the table for decades, and undoubtedly technology is being developed and experimented with that will make it an immediate reality and thus pose new threats. And second, how far has the military moved ahead with the weaponization of space?"
Well, that's a big question. We should be concerned about it, number one, for several reasons. Number one, the cost, the sheer cost of it. The Pentagon has long said that what we call Star Wars will be the largest industrial project in the history of the planet Earth. And they've come up with a dedicated funding source to pay for it. This was reported some years ago in the weekly aerospace industry publication called Space News. They said, "We're now sending our lobbyists to Washington to secure this dedicated funding source." And they said it's the entitlement programs, which officially are Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and what's left of the welfare program. And so these are the programs that the aerospace industry has identified for defunding. Secondly, a war in space would create so much space debris, space junk, orbiting the planet at 15,000 miles an hour, that we would literally become entombed to the planet. This was told to us by Edgar Mitchell, Apollo astronaut, who came to a protest at the Kennedy Space Center some years ago that I organized, opposing weapons in space, and he said that we would be entombed to the planet. We wouldn't be able to get a rocket through this piranha-filled river, so to speak, that would be space, and that pretty soon there would be a cascading effect as this space debris would increase as it smashed into old satellites, the International Space Station, etc. And then virtually everything we do here on the planet, from cell phones to banking and all kinds of other things, would essentially go dark because satellites would be destroyed in space. And so it's a very dangerous moment that we're in. But this has been going on, as you alluded. Obama also during his administration and before that Bush and before that Bill Clinton. This has been a bipartisan effort to refuse to sit down with the Russians and Chinese to negotiate a global ban on weapons in space. And the reason is because the U.S. intends to control the high ground, achieve space superiority, what they call freedom to attack, freedom to maneuver. And they've been saying that since the late 90s at the U.S. Space Command.
Well, while Trump certainly poses a great threat to our planet and species, wasn't it Obama who really set the stage? Because it was Obama's National Defense Authorization Act that seems to set the stage for space arms race. And it was also under Obama that a $1 trillion-plus nuclear weapons initiative was launched. Obama also shifted $5 billion towards space defense, and the Air Force already created a new space mission force. So please put Trump's rhetoric into a greater perspective based upon the Obama legacy to have weapons in space.
You're absolutely correct. Let me just go back a little farther to George W. Bush, though. In 2002, he pulled the U.S. out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the ABM Treaty, that outlawed so-called missile defense systems that are the shield that would be used after the U.S. launches a first strike attack on Russia and China, something they annually war game at the U.S. Space Command. It was during the Obama years, then, that after Bush pulled out of the ABM treaty, Obama escalated the deployment of missile defense systems encircling both Russia and China. So today in Romania, this year into Poland, are going new ground-based missile defense systems. They're being deployed all over Asia on ground. And then in both cases surrounding Russia and China, Navy Aegis destroyers that are made in my hometown of Bath, Maine, that are outfitted with these same missile defense interceptors. In fact, it was, you earlier referred to the U.S. Navy knocking out a old U.S. satellite showing that U.S. had anti-satellite capability. That was fired from one of these Aegis destroyers. One of these SM-3 interceptor missiles showed that it could go up and hit an orbiting target all the way in space. So these now, these missile defense systems under Obama, have been deployed encircling both Russia and China, forcing them to say, we can't afford to negotiate any more nuclear arms reductions because our retaliatory capability is now in danger because of your missile defense deployments. We've got to hang on to our retaliatory capability. And that's where we are today, off to a new arms race that will only benefit the aerospace industry here in the United States.
Well, as a follow-up to that, where is the $1 trillion-plus nuclear weapons modernization program that Obama initiated stand at this time? And Obama said his program should not be perceived as the start of a new Cold War against Russia. But you just said that Romania, and of course we also know other countries in Eastern Europe, including Poland, that we have alliances with, are creating a wall on the western side of Russia with militarized camps and weaponry. So that's posturing. That's NATO.
Well, it's not Romania and Poland that are creating those. Mm-hmm. They're allowing the United States to deploy our systems in their country. Essentially, they've become colonies. They've become vehicles. They've become bases for U.S. and NATO military expansion right up to the Russian border. And that's why we've been seeing Russia and China both freaking out, saying, hey, wait a minute, you know, you can't inch up on us like this. In fact, when the Berlin Wall fell and the U.S. Secretary of State, then Jim Baker, told Russia that, okay, look, we're not going to expand NATO one inch towards the east as Germany becomes reunified. We're not going to do that. Well, ever since Clinton, NATO has been on steroids and massively expanding up to the Russian border. And that's why we see, again, both Russia and China today, as they're being encircled too, both those countries saying, wait a minute, you know, if we went to Canada and Mexico and we're doing this to you, you guys in America would be freaking out. You'd go ballistic. But now you're doing it to us, and we're just supposed to accept it? That's a real, real contradiction.
The doomsday clock maintained by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, which tries to estimate how close the planet is to nuclear war, has placed us between 2 to 3 minutes to midnight since the new year. In other words, tensions between nuclear powers are extremely high. How much does a continuation to weaponize space, especially with nuclear missiles, increase the likelihood of a nuclear exchange?
I think it's dramatically increased, and I'm very worried about it, more than I've ever been. Even back during the days I worked in the peace movement in the early 80s during the height of the Cold War, and I've never been this concerned, because even back then, as tense as it was, because the Soviet Union had that Warsaw Pact, they had a buffer between Europe and the Russian border. And they're worried, again, about another invasion, this time by the United States and NATO, and the kind of talk that we hear coming out of the United States, the kind of talk we hear coming out of leading U.S. and NATO generals about, you know, we're ready to fight. We're ready to fight tonight against Russia. We're ready to go. And it's frightening. And I think we're in a very, very dangerous moment. And sadly, this time around, since the Cold War, at least we had some reporting in the days of the Cold War and mainstream media about these kind of things. But now, today, not. Now it's cheerleading. They're cheerleading this kind of going after Russia and China, which is really, really very provocative and dangerous.
Final comment, and we only have a minute for this. Does it give you pause when hyper adrenaline war hawks like John Bolton and the new woman heading the CIA, and the fact that there are three generals now surrounding the president, that all of these individuals are pro-war, anti-Russia, anti-China, anti-Iran?
Well, and add to that, the number of military officers now, the preponderance of them, who are Christian fundamentalists, who want to see the coming of Armageddon, because that means that Jesus will return or something like that. So it's very frightening, and I think the only alternative that we, more rationally based people, peace-loving people, have is to be out in the streets more than ever, and we've got to do it. And we've got to connect the dots. You know, there's a lot of protests against little guns these days, but we ought to be also connecting those dots to the militarization of our culture and the fact that these big guns that we have will kill a lot more children than the little guns.
That's a very important point you just made, Bruce. And I thank you for all the good work and the decades of dedication to the peace movement. We certainly honor all of your commitment to us, we the people. Thank you.
Could I just give a pitch for our website, Space for
Sure.
Peace, spaceforpeace.org, spaceforpeace.org. And we have a video section on our website that I highly recommend.
I would also recommend to our audience that you were a co-author with Noam Chomsky and John Pilger of the recent book Voices for Peace, War, Resistance, and then America's Quest for Full Spectrum Dominance. My guest, Bruce Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.